From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, October 11th, 2018. And on this day, what it might mean for Portland to pay the prevailing wage for city contracts, who's for it and who's against it. And a Dixmont man is facing criminal charges after a troubling incident that ended with police blowing up his house with him inside. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light. Tickets available at MaineGardens.org.
The Maine Department of Education has received more than $5 million from the federal government to support student mental health in three school districts. The new initiative, called Maine Aware, is intended to help schools bring mental health resources into the classroom and to design support systems for students and families who need help. Emily Poland is a school nurse consultant for the Maine Department of Education. She says the project is the first in Maine to attempt to create a statewide system to support student mental health. Poland says those efforts can help students academically as well.
And then being able to make a difference in their academic achievement, their attendance in school. If their mental health, behavioral health needs are being met, then those things should improve too.
The state will implement the program in schools in Callis, Rumford, and Waldoboro. The money will be spent on new staff, curriculum, and training for teachers across the districts. Tomorrow, Mike Grendel of Dixmont will appear before a judge to ask for a suspended sentence in an unusual case. It was about 3 months ago when Grendel experienced a mental health breakdown and his friends called police for help. 20 hours later, Grendel's house would be leveled by a robot bomb. He would be shot 3 times and he would face criminal charges. As Patty White reports, the case raises questions about police use of force when responding to a mental health crisis.
On a recent rainy day, Lee Bell is standing on the 2-acre property where his best friend Mike Grendel's house once stood.
As you can see, there's just a slab here.
Just a few months ago, this 24-by-24 concrete slab supported a 2-story house filled with antiques from a general store once owned by Grendel's grandfather. All that's left now is debris. Shards of glass in the garden that Grendel meticulously tended, a sheet of drywall in the woods nearby, bits of insulation that cling to a shrub. As Bell surveys the damage, he thinks back to when he called the police to help his friend.
You know, the part that even blames myself, you know, when I saw the just devastation of this whole explosion. And, I mean, could it have ended any other way? I just really, truthfully can't believe it actually happened.
Bell and Grendel have been friends for decades. They live just a minute or two's drive away from each other. Bell's the kind of friend who would run a plate of dinner up to Grendel from time to time. And Grendel was like a second father to Bell's kids. Bell's son, Jacob Irish, calls Grendel the gentle giant.
You know, very calm, cool demeanor, always soft-spoken and just treated everybody with respect.
But last spring, Bell says his friend's behavior started to change. He stopped going to his job in maintenance at a nearby mobile home community. He painted his mailbox several times over, even in the rain. He stopped returning phone calls. Things took a dramatic turn on the evening of June 27th. When Bell came home, he found Grendel in the driveway. A UPS driver dropped off a package, and Bell says Grendel became agitated.
He's kind of looking at me, but yet he's still looking right by me. Kept mentioning, is that package for me? Is that package for me?
Grendel displayed a gun and a small hatchet, which Bell says was out of character. To avoid trouble, he handed Grendel the package and went inside. About 20 minutes later, he drove to his friend's house to check on him, but he says Grendel chased him in his truck, shooting at him with a handgun. Bell made it safely back to his house. He decided not to call the police for fear that Grendel would be harmed. But the next morning, Irish says he and his father decided to call in law enforcement.
When they got here, we explained to them for a long time the severity of the mental breakdown that he's having.
Officers arrived on the scene just before 2 in the afternoon, and using the PA system, they told Grendel to come out of the house with his hands up. Grendel's attorney, David Bate, says his client emerged from the house.
And Mr. Grendel comes out in his underwear with his hands up and asks if they're the real police.
The police identify themselves as state troopers, but Grendel walks back inside and closes the door. For the next 20 hours, police tried unsuccessfully to draw him out of the house. They give instructions over the PA system, play a message from Jacob Irish, and activate sirens and an air horn. To show Grendel that they're the real police, they turn on the blue lights of an armored vehicle. Around 5 o'clock the next morning, they decide to breach a window. That, says David Bate, is when things started to escalate.
So you had a man who didn't believe there were the real police outside, and they drive this black armored vehicle, somewhat sinister looking in my opinion, down to the side of his house, which is unusual, and then they take up, there's a pole sticking off of this Bearcat machine, and they smash in his window. That's the poking of the bear that started Mr. Grendel firing at the police.
Police reports say that Grendel fired back immediately and continued to shoot sporadically over the next few hours. Because they can't pinpoint his exact location in the house, police decide to take down a wall using an explosive strapped to a robot.
And as that robot started down the driveway, predictably, Mr. Grendel thought it was coming from the fake police, and he shot at and disabled it. And I think that action saved Mr. Grendel's life.
Police were still able to detonate the explosive, which blew out the first floor of Grendel's house, sending the roof down onto the slab. According to police reports, Grendel crawled out from the rubble and retrieved a rifle. Police ordered him to drop it. It's unclear whether Grendel's hearing was affected by the explosion, but he didn't drop the rifle. Police shot him 3 times, twice in the shoulder, once through his jaw. He was taken by Lifelight to Maine Medical Center. Attorney David Bate says the police grossly overreacted.
I'm just astonished that they could use this much destructive power against a citizen, and also astonished that the citizen survived. And it's just a miracle.
Grendel is now at Riverview Psychiatric Center waiting for a bail hearing. He faces 1 count of criminal threatening with a dangerous weapon and 1 count of reckless conduct with a dangerous weapon for shots allegedly fired at Lee Bell. The Maine State Police declined to comment on active cases, but Major Christopher Groton says the goal is to resolve these kinds of standoffs peacefully. And he says many troopers are trained in mental health first aid.
But we do find sometimes when we can't establish a dialogue with an individual, and that really limits our ability to use techniques to de-escalate. When you simply can't communicate with somebody, that clearly makes it very, very difficult to try to peacefully resolve that.
Jenna Maynard of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness in Maine, says when responding to someone having a mental health crisis, it's important to exercise patience.
And taking things slow, talking low, giving it time. And that's hard when there are competing demands, but that's what a person with mental illness needs.
Maynard says law enforcement doesn't always have that luxury, but she sees the Dixmont incident as a learning opportunity for both law enforcement and the mental health system. Back in Dixmont, Lee Bell walks among a crumpled front door, Benton refrigerator, and other remains of Grendel's house that are piled on the other side of the woods from the concrete slab. A neighborhood group raised $1,500 for a dumpster to clean up the house. Bell brought his excavator to take care of the remaining debris. He says he couldn't stand to drive by his friend's house and see the wreckage.
You know, I'm never going to get over this. I mean, not what he did to me. That didn't bother me a damn bit. How it played out in the end.
His son, Jacob Irish, questions the actions of the police.
Why did you have to resort to completely blowing up a guy's entire house? Everything someone worked for their whole life, you know, it's like, you don't think twice about taking that away from them.
And Bell and Irish are worried Grendel will lose even more if he's incarcerated. His attorney, David Bate, says at Friday's hearing, he'll ask the judge for a suspended sentence and 4 years probation. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
In Portland, a union-backed wage and benefit initiative introduced by Mayor Ethan Strimling is putting him at odds with the local and state business community and the city manager. Fred Bever has more.
Strimling wants all city contracts worth more than $50,000 to require that vendors pay workers the regional prevailing wage and participate in an apprenticeship program. And he wants to give those who provide more benefits, such as safety training or health care coverage, extra points in the bidding process.
I think it's important because, one, it creates a fairness on the job.
Don Nazaroff is a representative of the state sheet metal workers union. He was one of about three dozen supporters of Strimling's proposal, mostly union members, who turned out for a public hearing at City Hall this week.
My contractors have a hard time competing against the non-union for the fact that they treat their employees fair. They give them a real decent wage. They give them health care. And they give them a retirement benefit.
Prevailing wages for construction jobs in Cumberland County range from $12 an hour for a flagger to more than $28 an hour for licensed electricians. That's according to the State Department of Labor. Speaking for the Portland Regional Chamber of Commerce, Simon Thompson came down firmly against the idea.
The chamber is very concerned about the fiscal impact of this proposal to public works projects in the city and the resulting strain that would be passed on to taxpayers.
Citing a memo by city staff exploring fiscal impacts, Thompson says the city would have to add staff to enforce compliance with the prevailing wage requirement. The same memo found that the cost of city contracts could balloon as much as 30%. The memo relies heavily on consultant studies from other states that were conducted by free market think tanks with ties to conservative funders, including the Koch brothers.
I'm not a big fan, or do I spend all of my time thinking about these reports, both on the progressive side and on the conservative side, because they have an agenda.
Putting aside political ideology on both sides, city manager John Jennings says he can't get behind the initiative for another reason.
When you talk to the people on the ground in the state of Maine, the contractors, the companies, which is what we have been doing, you get the real picture.
Strimling's proposals, he said, would exclude many Maine-based vendors who were telling the city that they don't have the capacity to administer compliance or participate in apprenticeship programs. And he says many local contractors would not be able to commit to health care coverage or other benefits Strimling wants to reward with extra points in contract bid processes. Jennings says the result would be more bids and more expensive bids won by out-of-state vendors, particularly big companies based in Massachusetts, which does require prevailing wages for most public works projects.
We're not going to be able to compete and we'll be left out of working with some Maine contractors. So that leaves us kind of more out-of-state contractors that have the provisions that the mayor is talking about. I mean, this is kind of a model based on what Massachusetts does.
Mayor Strimling says he's disappointed that city staff, as he put it, put their thumb on the scales by turning to conservative think tanks to analyze the proposal's costs. And he cites other studies, some by academics, some funded by labor, that find little added cost for taxpayers when prevailing wage programs are in place.
What these studies have shown is that they've got to pay people the same wage, and therefore it becomes more effective for them to just hire people locally. They then have to, because they can't bring in cheap labor from elsewhere.
While union workers turned out in force to support Strimling's plan, the only opponents to speak were the Chamber of Commerce and the president of the Associated General Contractors of Maine. No actual vendors attended. That could change if Strimling is able to get his measure out of committee and before the full city council. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Thursday, October 11th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.